I'm Michael Kist of Bleeding Green Nation, and I invite you, gentle listener, to join us for the best analysis of the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles in the business. BGN Radio provides you with the most informative preview shows, and the Kist and Solak show dives deep into all the scheme and X and O details you could ever want. Plus discussions with the industry's brightest minds, including former NFL players, and press conferences from the Eagles coaching staff to keep you up to date and informed every step of the way. Subscribe to Bleeding Green Nation today. Fly, Eagles, fly.
It is gone! A two-run home run for Reese Hoskins. Game over! Bronco wins it!
He got it! Pulled it right out of the bushes!
Swing and a miss! He got him! And Aaron Nola leads two.
Swing and a miss! Struck him out!
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 250. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. And joining me, as they do every Sunday night, are my good friends Justin Clue and Liz Rocher. Justin, now, what is the title now, Justin? Now that you're running The Good Fight for us, you can follow Justin on Twitter at Justin underscore Clue. But Justin has a shiny, fancy title, and we can't call you the Supreme Blog Mister, because that sounds dumb, but what are we calling you now?
I mean, that's an excellent question.
He's running The Good Fight, kids. Yeah. That's all you need to know.
I mean, where I got my title from was from Peter, who was the Supreme Blog Lord.
Right, and I don't have, I don't have as high, wishes and as the, my two predecessors.
It's from a different era.
Clearly
it's
had
from
their
a much
eyes
different
set
era
on
of the far, website, guys.
Far more just highfalutin concepts. I'm more down to earth kind of. So I've referred myself as head guy in my Twitter profile, and yeah. I'm kind of just going with that.
Just rolls off the tongue, man. I tell you what,
I'm not planning to invade any other countries or anything because I am in charge of the website, so everyone can relax.
All right, so we're joined
call me Head Guy. Yeah. My father was Mr. Head Guy.
That's right, Head Guy Justin Clue joining us, and Liz Rocher, you just heard a second ago from Yahoo Sports. Follow Liz on Twitter at Liz Rocher. Liz, how you doing?
Oh, I hate the Patriots so much.
I know. We all delayed.
Sorry to go right into it, but God, I grew up in New England. I grew up surrounded by that. We never got Eagles games. Occasionally we did. My father would huddle around the television like it was a huge event. My father, who is not passionate about, he's passionate about some things, but sports, the only things that get him going in sports are Philadelphia sports. Stranded in Maine, he would huddle around the television. I hated the Patriots so much growing up, and they just will not leave me alone.
Here's where I'm at on this. Now, I'm not even just bored of the Patriots going to the Super Bowl. I'm bored of, and Liz, I'm not directing this at you. No. I'm just bored of people saying how mad they are that the Patriots are once again in the Super Bowl. At this point, I'm more interested in, and I know there's an answer to this, I'm more interested in Patriots fans, that small subset of the American population that does not utterly despise the New England Patriots. Like, I know it's silly to think that even they could be bored by now. I mean, I guess at this point, a whole new generation is introducing
true.
The Patriots.
We're into our second generation. That's right.
So, okay. But like, you can't tell me that the same excitement is still there this year, 10 minutes ago when they beat the Chiefs in the AFC Championship. You can't tell me that same excitement is there as like the first, second, and third time that Tom Brady won Super Bowls. You can't tell me that they are just as up. It must be like a chore almost at this point again. Like, yeah, I mean, businesses are happy, but workers are like, God, we got to set up for another one of these pep rallies, another one of these parades. Like, God damn it, sweeping up the confetti again. Like, I just don't believe at all that the same level of excitement is there that there was, 25 years ago when the Patriots started winning Super Bowls?
Yeah,
well, they did have last year off.
That's right. They didn't win last year, but they got there. And I remember when the Phillies were winning all those NL East titles in a row, by 2010 and 2011, I don't remember the night they won the National League East in either of those seasons. Because that wasn't a big moment for us. We had eyes on a larger prize. And I guess that's kind of how it is with the Patriots now, with games like tonight, although getting to the Super Bowl is still a big deal. But you're right, Justin. I mean, this has become such old hat to New England fans. I'm sure that most of them are still excited. But, you know, I saw a video actually online of people in an L.A. bar watching the Rams win the Super Bowl. And it was like casual handshakes of congratulations. I mean,
oh, that's
like, why?
That's
why did we send two teams to L.A. again?
No, for no, absolutely no reason other than money. No reason.
No, I'm with you. The immediate comparison is obviously the 07, 2011 Phillies teams. And you're right that I don't remember, but I do remember like exact moments like that. But I do remember specific moments from each one, and I can use them all to even just chart where I was, where sure. I was living. If, mm-hmm. if that's ever a question, like, oh, which year was that? I can do that pretty easily. This is also like a period in which the Phillies were just good for 5 years. Not like they won five straight World Series in a row. Like they right. just don't have a dynasty. There's just that doesn't exist by its like real term, which I think we all agree is like at least three championships in a row. But yeah, I kind of was thinking the same thing. Like, no, I was excited all five of those years.
Yeah, I was too.
But I guess, you know, that World Series stands out like as, you know, as singularly as it deserves to. But that, yeah, like I said, I tried to put myself in those shoes, but I'm just not as like, I didn't wake up and crawl out of like a toilet this morning. So I can't really put myself into the mindset of a New England Patriots fan. So it's tough.
Well, they have a bitter loss that they're still working to get over. And that was, of course, losing to the Eagles last year. I feel bad for Andy
Reid. They barely remember it happened.
Do you think they even remember the team they played?
That's the thing. I know that sounds insane, but I feel like, I mean, I interact with so few Patriots fans anywhere.
It's like, because there are so few of them. You know, the thing here is that, too, the other side of the coin is hating the Patriots getting back into the Super Bowl, just hating this thing happening over and over again. Third straight year they're in the Super Bowl. They're in it every damn year. And, you know, now we got to root for the Rams to beat the Patriots because nobody wants to see Tom Brady win again. But here, the thing is, too, on the other side of the field was Andy Reid. And I know there's mm-hmm. some Eagles fans out there, and it's a large vocal minority, I think, that still hates Andy Reid, thinks he was terrible for the franchise, hated when he left, just never liked the guy. And I get that Andy Reid had some times where he wasn't well loved. He, you know, to some people in the public, you know, when he would do his news conferences, it was not an overly friendly face a lot of times. But man, that guy brought a lot of good times to Philadelphia. And I was really hoping since we got ours last year that he would be able to get back to the Super Bowl. And man, to not even get, for his team to not even get a chance in overtime to play after getting the game tying field goal with like 38 seconds left on the clock when they started with the ball is ridiculous. It's crazy that the Chiefs didn't get a chance, that Mahomes didn't get a chance to go down the field and answer New England's touchdown. I know some people think that it's the worst rule in professional sports. What do you guys think? Is the overtime rule in the NFL the worst rule in professional sports, Liz?
It's abysmal in every way. I've never understood it. I don't know why people even consider it acceptable. Like, how does that work? Is this just a baseball mentality that we have? Because, you know, unless you're the home team, both sides get, you know, the chance. Both sides get a chance. There's a top and a bottom of an inning. I don't understand why the other team doesn't get to take the field. Like, I get it that they want it to end.
Yeah,
but this is like what putting a runner on second base is like for me in like the late innings. Like, why are you're tipping the scales in one direction? You're trying to tip the scales. Like, both teams should take the field. Why is that not a thing?
Yeah, Justin, I've always hated the college approach of overtime where each team gets set up at the 35-yard line or something like that. But at least in college, each team gets a chance. And I get the argument against it. It's like, all right, well, then New England scores, then the Chiefs score, then New England scores, then the Chiefs score. I mean, you could have a game that goes on forever. But you know what? In the playoffs, yeah, okay. Let's keep playing until somebody stops somebody.
I'm going to start with one rule that is real dumb, but I love it. So then I'll get to one I actually hate. But the one that I love is that baseball managers have to wear the same uniforms as their team. You don't think about it, but then when you stop and think about it, it's the silliest rule in all of sports that like a 65-year-old really man has to dress like a little boy, and that's just part of the sports. That's it. You got to do it. Otherwise, you're not.
You have to wear a costume. You have to wear a costume to go on the field. Everyone on the field has to be wearing a costume.
Imagine.
Including the umpires.
It's one level that NFL coaches have to wear, like the branded hat that the NFL is putting out that year, or like the branded, the new hoodie or whatever, that, you know, whatever form of clothing they're taking, they're just, you know, advertising for the NFL. But like, imagine like a baseball coach having to wear like a suit and a pair of cleats.
It is weird. It's very weird. And I think we've seen baseball managers start to go without the jerseys now. Every time I look in the dugout, I see managers they're wearing the pants, but they're wearing a sweatshirt or you know, a jacket most of the time. I don't see the managers wearing jerseys a lot of the time anymore. I know Kapler does. Kapler likes to wear the jersey, but like Joe Maddon, I don't think I've ever seen Joe Maddon in the full uniform.
You're talking about different kinds of managers there. At the back of his head, Jim Kapler still thinks there's an outside, very small chance that he's going to wind up in that baseball game somehow. So he is ready to go.
He's ready to get ready if called upon.
Kapler's doing calisthenics in his office, like before the game. He's getting his stretches in.
Like Craig Counsell doesn't wear the jersey. Like I remember that. I mean, I think Dave Roberts does, but I mean, it's just, I think it's just a difference in management style. I'm trying to think, I mean, maybe it has to, no, I mean, players and non-players have worn them. It's interesting. I think now it's just personal preference. Thankfully, whatever the ban has been lifted, the taboo.
Managers. I think it would be really strange to see managers in a suit in the dugout, but I think
like
a nice
Tony
happy
Mack.
Medium. Yeah, exactly. But I also think, you know, jeans and a t-shirt also looks a little bit weird. I think, you know, put the pants on and a sweatshirt or a t-shirt or jacket. I like that. I think that's a nice middle ground because at least makes you look like you're not some corporate executive who's come down to the dugout and has been able to manage the team for the day because you want
to
raffle.
And I don't want it to change. I want a stricter adherence to you must be wearing, you know, players are wearing. What are you doing, Joe? Take off the hoodie. If you don't look like the Bat Boy who just traveled through time several decades, then you're doing it wrong. The other thing the other rule I wanted to mention was like all-star selection, if that qualifies in just about any form.
Sure, yeah, we can do that. Yeah,
that kind of sucks.
Like the one guy from every team rule.
I mean the fact that just like ballot stuffing can occur for I guess that final vote now they do that can happen. Uh-huh. I mean I don't hate one guy from every team, but I would only say get rid of it if I could get a guarantee that a Phillies player would be in every year. But I mean, the same time, it would guarantee that I would watch when they did have one, you know, because it would be more of an anomaly. But at the same time, we're talking about getting bored watching the Patriots go to the Super Bowl every year. If the infield was like Cubs and Cardinals every time, then like, you know, yeah, I'm not going to be interested. I don't want to watch the Dodgers, you know, play the Yankees at the All-Star game. So you do kind of need that. It's more just like, I don't know, the fact that. At one stage, it's like the coaches pick the pitchers. And the other stage is fan vote. And this goes across sports, too. I mean, in some cases, the All-Star game shouldn't even exist, like in football. Hockey, I think, has done it a little better, just like 3-on-3 and like the skills competition and everything. The dunk contest is cool in basketball. That's pretty sweet. I guess mostly the Pro Bowl.
Yeah.
I guess what I'm doing is just zeroing in on the Pro Bowl. How stupid
the Pro Bowl
that
sucks.
Is.
It's totally useless. It's totally useless. There's no doubt about it. And I like the one representative from every team rule. I know that it leads to some snubs, but I don't care. I've talked about this on the podcast before. I remember as a kid growing up in the late 80s, early 90s, and some seasons where you only had one representative. I'd stay up as a kid to watch the one representative get in. I'd watch Ricky Vitalico in the 96 All-Star game pitch his inning, and then, okay, I'm off to bed. You know, that's what I wanted to see.
What a bummer to have it in Philadelphia and have it be Ricky Vitalico.
Ricky freaking Vitalico.
My philosophy on that is why should fans be punished? Because in many ways, their ownership has decided that it's okay to suck. Right. Like, why should fans be punished if their team is horrible? They didn't ask for it. Like, they want to see someone from their team. And there's usually one guy who is not sucking despite, you know, the team's wishes otherwise.
Totally. No, I get. And that's the reason you do it is to keep fans from every city interested in the All-Star game, as such as it is now. And the All-Star game used to be a much bigger deal back in the old days. It's not as big a deal anymore, but I still enjoy it. And I think we all still enjoy it to a degree. But I like to watch mostly. I'm tuning in for whenever the Phillies pitch, and watching Aaron Nola pitch last year, his inning was pretty amazing. But the reason why we're talking about these worst rules is because I do believe that overtime rule is one of the worst rules in sports, and I'm trying to think of what Major League Baseball's worst rule could be. And
I mean, did you have a suggestion? I was going to say pass ball on a third strike.
That was one of the ones I was thinking of. Yes, go ahead. Why is it?
Well, that one.
Yeah,
I mean, just because it seems like a holdover from a bygone era. None of the players don't really take it that seriously anymore. I mean, of course, you have a couple of exceptions every year. But, I mean, you know, he's out. Like, the catcher dropping the ball is such a backdoor way to get on base. And so many guys just don't even bother running anyway, or it's just an obligatory jog. It's just kind of used. It's more like getting rid of the intentional, like throwing four pitches on an intentional walk kind of thing. Like, you know, it doesn't need to be a thing.
Yeah.
And if you're trying to generate more offense, that's kind of not the answer.
Yeah. I mean, the hitter struck out. The pitcher did his job and the hitter struck out. He should be out. You don't get to go to first base because the ball got by the catcher. I think that's dumb. Now, listen, if there's a guy on third base and the ball gets by the catcher, that guy should have a chance to score. That's where that's where the wild pitch comes in and can hurt you. But the guy who struck out shouldn't get to go take first base. That's ridiculous. And in some cases, that rule doesn't apply. If first base is occupied, you can't run to first base. That rule does not apply because you can't force the runner from first to run to second in that particular case. So if first base is occupied, the reaching base on a drop third strike doesn't matter anyway. So a lot of times fans are confused. They go, why didn't he run? Well, he can't run. There's a guy on first base. It's just it's one of those rules that's stupid. It should just go away. Liz, do you have another idea for Major League Baseball's worst rule?
Well, it was definitely – it used to be, you know, the four-pitch – walk. I really hated them having to throw that. It always seemed dumb. Like, you know, you're intentionally walking him. Just send him to first. Don't throw the ball. Like, I don't think it saves a lot of time. I just think it's just a needless waste of energy and a stupid show. And I'm glad it doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
And now when I see it back, I'm just like, why? Why did we spend so much time doing that?
Well, I've got a cut. Go ahead, Justin.
Well, I was going to say today, in reference to just rules and blown calls and everything, the former MLB editor at the Sporting News, Justin McGuire, was talking about the Jeffrey Mayer stealing the home run in 96, I want to say.
Yeah, 96, 96.
For the Yankees over the Orioles. And whatever rule, whatever God made that happen, that remains a very, sore spot on my baseball fandom. Really, really not interested in whatever allowed that to happen. And I guess to a bigger extent, just that interpreting that to today is sort of like the replay rules, which I guess could prevent that sort of thing. But I mean, that's like a fan interference issue too. But the replay rules in general, the baseball doesn't seem to know how to enforce these things. It seems like they're using new technology to sort of, modernize the game and bring replay into it. Like, okay, I remember very frustrating moments where it was like, well, they made the call and there's absolutely no reversing that. So damn it. But at the same time, they just don't, it still seems very subjective and kind of loose, which plays can be reviewed, which ones can't be. And like, you've seen them review something. It apparently be overturnable and the umpires just decide, or whoever's on the other end of the phone decides that no, it's not. So I feel like there's still a level of subjectivity that goes into that that hasn't really eliminated the human error that they were so trying to lessen by introducing it.
I'll tell you a couple of things about the instant.
The NFL has that problem too.
Yeah.
Tonight, like the game before with the Saints and Rams. The missed pass interference call, that is not reviewable is it's they the fact that the fact that the Saints got a call afterwards saying, yeah, they screwed it up. They blew it. It was an incredibly obvious pass interference. Oh, my God. Like, that's inexcusable that that can't be taken care of.
Let me ask you guys this.
It really is insane. And it's a kid. Like, their home plate plays. Like, I think a foul tip is not reviewable or something like that. Or some. I remember there's a C.B. Buckner blown call for some reason. And I'm failing to remember, but like that was not reviewable. And the umpires got together and discussed it. And they're like, no, it's not reviewable. So it's going to stand even though it's obvious. So like that's what the analog is for me.
How would you guys as supporters of the Philadelphia Eagles, would you give up? Would you want to see the Saints get to the Super Bowl despite them beating the Eagles if it meant that the Patriots would lose on a missed call like that, and they would get a call from the league saying like, "Our bad, we got it wrong," but they still would like lose and wouldn't be going to the Super Bowl.
Yeah. My hatred for the Patriots is stronger than my hatred for the for
yeah,
the
me
Saints.
Too. Okay,
you know.
Oh yeah, the Saints just beat us once. I don't care. Like they beat us a big, but you know, big.
And they've been punks, and I get you know, and I don't like how much they've been punking us lately for absolutely no reason whatsoever. But no, I definitely would have rather the Saints win, and for Tom Brady to get gypped out of another Super Bowl, and for the league office to have to call Tom and say, "We're really sorry, we missed that call." I absolutely agree.
But what would that do to their fans who are already
triggered,
self-righteous?
They
would make some of them would just die from incredible self-righteous poison.
I'll tell you what it is about the baseball instant replay rules that
I don't
that
want
I hate.
Any of them to die. I'm saying that's what would happen.
No, we know. We got you. I hate how managers are allowed to have somebody sitting in the clubhouse looking at the instant replay to tell them whether or not they should have.
Oh yeah.
Whether they should challenge a play. Like, how could Gabe Kapler coming onto the top step and with two hands up, holding up play so that whoever is in the clubhouse can be rewinding the tape to see if they should challenge the player. And I'm like, no, we're good now. You shouldn't be allowed to do that. You should have to be able to see live and say, I don't think you guys got that call right. I'm going to challenge it. Without the benefit of somebody sitting in the clubhouse looking at the tape and saying, yeah, Gabe, challenge that one. That I don't like. I don't like that at all.
That's a really good one, John. I mean, because if not letting them do that would make it sort of an intersection of like the modern game, but also guts and instinct. And he's got to just like know or trust his player who's out there going like, do it. Even though every player on a close play where they're embarrassed is saying, oh, check the thing. Because right now there's no accountability for being wrong. You know, there's just none. Yeah. So I think that's a really good one.
The other two that I'll mention, and one is that I don't agree with, but I know a lot of people hate the designated hitter rule, but you know I would love to see the DH in the National League, so that's just, that's, you know, I know some people, that's a rule that's hated by probably half the population, but also the Buster Posey rule. We talk about the Buster Posey rule all the time, how screwed up that home plate collision rule is. I get why they put it in there, but they're still having trouble implementing that thing, and I think that might be overall baseball's worst rule, but it's not as fundamental as the NFL's overtime rule. Like the NFL's overtime rule decided who went to the Super Bowl. A team was not allowed to take the field because of the NFL overtime rule. And I wonder if this game is going to cause people to change that rule, to take a look at it and say, listen, we got to make sure Patrick Mahomes gets a chance to take the field in overtime. I mean, you want these, you want to see if Mahomes can answer there. If you're the NFL, if you're the commissioner's office.
If you're a fan, of football, well, that's what you're saying. Yeah. The league wants that because every fan wanted to see that. Like all game long, it was some of the most watchable football of the season. All day long, it was the most watchable football of the season, and there was less of it because of that stupid rule.
Let's jump to something else real quick, and I saw a lot of reaction online. We're going to get into some Philly specific stuff here in just a few minutes, but there's no Mitch Harper news. There's really not a lot of hot stove information coming out as we're recording this at the moment, so we're kind of just jumping on some different things here, folks. one of the things I saw online and watching the AFC Championship game is people loving on Tony Romo and the job he does as a broadcaster. And I got to agree. I think he's fantastic in what he does. And noting that some of the people that I was watching online commenting on his performance, talking about the enthusiasm that he brings to what he's doing. And I know a complaint of ours last year was not just listening to some Phillies broadcasts, specifically on the radio, but in baseball in general. I mean, John Smoltz would do this a lot, all the time last year, just taking a dump on the game. I understand that players from the 80s and 90s don't like the way the game is played right now, but it's just, it's a constant whining about how the game is played right now, how terrible it is, how it's changed too much. And you could hear it in their voices that they don't like what it is they're watching. They don't like the product. And, you know, there's a lot of people who feel that the NFL has some issues with the product, with the way it's presented. But you hear Tony Romo talk about the game and it makes you excited. It makes you invested. It makes you engaged. And that's what baseball announcers need. There needs to be more baseball announcers like that, Liz, that are enthusiastic, that sound like they really, really, really want to be there and think that the game that they're broadcasting is fantastic.
Tony Romo was gleeful. I mean, in addition to just having the game of his life, you know, from start to finish, he was on point. He was funny. He was, you know, calling plays before they happened. It was magical. But when he wasn't doing all that, he could barely contain himself because it was a good football game. It was an annoying football game because the Patriots were in it, you know, but it was a good football game, even with all the officiating drama. You know, it was fun to watch and he was having fun watching it. He's like, I played the game for so long and now look at what I'm doing. I'm talking about it for a living. Like, it's kind of the best thing that could happen to a guy like Tony Romo, a guy I hated as a player. My God, did I hate him. And I resisted for as long as I could, but he's just delightful.
Yeah.
And my comparison is Kevin Franzen has that glee. You know, I don't know if we've heard enough of him to really know if he's got some of the analytical skills.
Yeah.
He doesn't need a lot. He needs some. But he definitely has that joy and that excitement. He loves watching the Phillies. He really gets into the games. He's cheering and hooting. It's fun. He really loves it. So more of that. Everyone should have that. Can Tony Romo call my game?
I was going to say, let's get Tony Romo in the booth. No, I agree with you, Liz. Franzen was awesome last year. It was such a breath of fresh air from Larry Anderson, who used to be a joy to listen call baseball games because he was funny and just turned cranky last year. And I think we've seen, like I mentioned, some of the national guys, Justin, just didn't sound. One of the national people I really enjoy is Jess Mendoza on Sunday night. She sounds like she's just having the time of her life calling baseball games. And I think that's something that's can make the game you're watching better, even if you think that there are things wrong with the game. And I think we would both agree baseball's not perfect, and in a lot of ways it's maybe not as much fun as it used to be, but it could again be fun. And you know, the more we get used to the way the game is played now, it'll get more fun. But for some people, part of what baseball needs is announcers to help sell the product on the air as they're watching it, and that's what Tony Romo did today, and that's what baseball needs.
Yeah, no, I think there's a level of excitement that broadcasters and announcers can have that even if you're a little bit of a homer, it shouldn't really matter if you're doing like a regional broadcast. People want you to be more excited when things are happening for their team. And on the national level, just to see somebody who's psyched to be there as like, you know, excited as that broadcast from Williamsport ESPN does now every year at the Little League Classic. Like, that's to see the like announcers be as excited as kids on the field. That's what you should be doing, given the efforts baseball needs to make to engage with a younger audience. But like, you're not always going to get that from former players, and they sort of get these chalked or just automatically get these analyst roles. And in a lot of in some cases, it doesn't make any sense. It's just purely for the recognition. We talk about John Smoltz. I mean, John Smoltz and Tony Romo, two guys who just like both retired, who would both obviously rather be playing. But sort of aged gracefully into this phase of their careers. And Tony Romo's like, look, all right, my career ended. Now I'm up here and this is as close as I can get to playing. And I'm having a lot of fun talking about the sport that I'm very knowledgeable about. And I'm getting other people excited about it. John Smoltz looks at it and he's just resentful and bored, and everything he sees is something that's wrong. And that it just doesn't have to be that way, as we've clearly learned with our own little smaller version of that in the Phillies circles, with Franson and the radio booth being as enthusiastic as he's been. And then like Mike Schmidt. Mike Schmidt's not in the booth because he's a good broadcaster. He's in the booth because like your dad and, you know, John, I guess, can say, hey, I watched him play.
It's Mike Schmidt.
But he's not good at broadcasting. He's just recognizable. And I mean, he does the same thing Smoltz does. He points out things he doesn't like, and then he talks about it for a while because he's just like, oh, you know, someone's nudging him and saying, like, hey, you haven't said anything for a little bit. And he's like, oh, I got to say something. All right, here we go. And it's just all complaints. And it just doesn't have to be that way. And I think you can get younger people, whether they're enthusiastic former players or people from who don't have playing experience, just people who are, I don't want to just say younger, but there's just definitely a level of enthusiasm or like fresher people who are maybe less familiar. It doesn't automatically have to be people who are like, yeah, I'll do it because I'm just trying to get paid and I pitched 12 years in the major leagues. It can be people who are excited about baseball, and that's what baseball needs to embrace. People who are excited about baseball, because baseball needs to get other people excited about baseball.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. And I just thought those were a couple interesting jumping off points from watching some of the football today as it relates to baseball. We'll get into some Philly-specific stuff now. And Justin, I know you wrote a piece about the Phillies' third base situation, which is still obviously up in the air because we don't know if Manny Machado will be manning the hot corner for the Phillies in 2019 and beyond. But as we're taking a look at this team and assuming, let's just assume for a second that Manny Machado does not sign with the Phillies, you're basically looking at an incumbent Michael Franco at third base, or trading Franco, which we have been hearing from multiple beat writers is something that almost seems like it's going to happen. It almost seems like a fait accompli at this point. But if they don't bring Manny Machado aboard, is that really the smart move? And if you move Michael Franco to somebody like the San Diego Padres, what do you do to replace him? We saw that the San Francisco Giants were rumored this week to be thinking about listening to offers for Evan Longoria, who was not good last year at all. Free agent Mike Moustakas is out there. You could sign a free agent like Marwin Gonzalez or something like that and make him a primary third baseman. But I know the piece that you wrote today has to do more with comparing Franco and Moustakas and looking at their numbers and trying to figure out even if Moustakas would be an upgrade over Michael Franco at this point, Justin.
Yeah, and the answer is about as little of an upgrade as you'd expect. I kind of left it up to readers to conclude who they would prefer, because honestly, it's not quite a push, but it is basically a push. It's just Franco's value is more that he's younger and seemed to ever so slightly be trending upwards for the first time in more than a blip of a way. So it's sort of like why at the end of the day, it turns into a why bother issue. Like you look at Moustakas' numbers from last year, overall, they weren't anything that is flooring you. But in a couple of areas where Michael Franco was not great, Moustakas was a little better. He gives you a little bit of an upgrade on defense, and he's able to hit left-handed pitching a little more consistently. But at the same time, again, you know, why bother? Is it an effort you really want to make? Because like overpaying for not as much of an improvement as putting Manny Machado at third base would be is something the Phillies could do, but it's almost at this point like Metsian. It's how we've been describing Brody Van Wagenen. It's kind of just like grabbing whatever has the highest value that is within arm's length and just sort of slamming it into a facade of a baseball team, and then like maybe that team does really well, maybe it doesn't, but you know, we grabbed what we could with the money we had, and next year we'll do it again. So is that really sound like the Phillies front office that we've come to know over the past few years? Not really, but this is going to be their most dramatic offseason of recent memory. The one thing I did want to like just investigate a little bit was, and I get both of your thoughts on this too, is that one of the things the Phillies obviously need to do is improve their defense. And I think a lot of people would tell you, including the writer I talked to from Royals Review, the SB Nation's Royals site, that Moustakas is a skilled defender. He's not like the best in the league or anything, but he is a skilled defender at third base. And with Gene Segura at shortstop, that's a pretty good, or at least a better left side of the infield. Does that, I mean, that's something that the Phillies then would have to do before they go after Dallas, a pitcher like Dallas Keuchel, who's a ground ball pitcher who they said they want to improve the defense before they get a pitcher like him. I mean, like, is that, I was trying to figure out what was motivating the Phillies to make this move with their being so, you know, so non-critical of a difference between Franco and Moustakas. So, like, is that possibly, is that like somewhere where they're coming from? Like, because he would help them make other moves they want to make?
Yeah, I think so, Justin, because if you look at the offensive numbers, they really are not a whole lot different. I mean, you had Moustakas batted .251 last year, Franco .270, but both had an on-base percentage that were nearly identical. Moustakas at .315, Franco at .314. Slugging percentage, Moustakas was a little under Franco, .459 to Franco's .467, but Moustakas had 6 more home runs, 28 to Franco's 22, 62 extra base hits to Michael Franco's 40, and as you mentioned, he was worth 2.5 wins above replacement in 152 games. Michael Franco was worth 0.2 wins above replacement in 131 games. So a lot of that value is coming from the defense. And I got to say, I think that probably would be the reason to do it. And we talked, Liz, during this offseason that the Phillies not only had to improve themselves offensively, but they had to figure out a way to improve themselves defensively. And I guess if you're only signing Moustakas to a one-year deal, it still gives you the opportunity to pursue Nolan Arenado or Anthony Rendon in free agency after this coming season, provided those guys don't sign extensions with their current teams. And it would shore up the left side of the defense a little bit for you to go out and get a guy like Dallas Keuchel or a guy like Wade Miley in the next few weeks or so. I just don't know if it's worth going through all the hassle. I mean, I guess, Liz, they only do it if they are really out on Michael Franco, right?
Yeah, and I was just looking up when the last time we heard that he was, you know, last time we heard a rumor, you know, last
about
time we
Franco?
Heard anything. Yeah, and yeah. Aside from the only thing I've seen, and I'm just using MLB trade rumors, they tend to keep a fairly comprehensive catalog. The last time we heard anything solid was November 16th.
Well, that's a while ago.
And it's just Jim Salisbury of NBC Sports Philadelphia reported recently that the Phillies are quite likely to deal away third baseman Michael Franco. And indeed, it seems a reasonable match already under contemplation with the Padres. And that's it. That's it. Everything else after that has been referring to this. And so I haven't heard anything about it. They have been not linked to him. I mean, and we're starting to hear more about, you know, who teams, you know, teams are being linked to players. The Phillies, I think, have been linked to Josh Harrison recently.
And that one makes no sense to me either, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a symptom of them being in on everyone, I guess. But we haven't heard anything about Moustakas at all. We haven't heard anything about Franco going anywhere. I don't even think the stuff about his standing offer from the Padres sounds, I feel like that's old.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like that's actually quite old. And so I have no idea if that even exists, still exists, if it did at all. And so I don't see why they would do it unless they super duper really desperately need to upgrade their defense. If they don't get Manny Machado, they'll have plenty of time to do it. They'll be able to figure it out. I don't necessarily think they want to overpay for someone like Moustakas because, again, why throw bad money after no money? If you're not going to get Machado, then why bother at all?
And the thing here, too, is, you know, as we're looking to spend some money here this year, and we all know that the Phillies are, you know, very interested in spending money, we don't necessarily also want to just bring in veteran guys for the sake of bringing in veteran guys. If the players are very similar, at least from an offensive standpoint, and I'm, again, with the defensive numbers and the metrics from last year, I'm not so sure I buy wholeheartedly that Franco was as bad defensively as the numbers might say. I realize he doesn't have a...
I was surprised at how dramatically bad those numbers made him.
I mean, I'm not... metrics are real. They're real unreliable, guys. just blanket note.
Right. So if you're basing making a switch on some defensive numbers, which are hinky to begin with, you're talking about trading in Michael Franco, who I think it would be 26 this year, for Moustakas, who just entered his age 30 season. So a guy who's about four or five years older than Michael Franco. Yeah. You don't want to just bring in veterans for the sake of bringing in veterans. When you have a young player who has a very similar profile to somebody that you would bring in, just go with the younger player for a year and see what happens. You can always make a trade at the trade deadline, too, if you want to.
They also did that last year. They brought in veteran players just to bring them in because they just decided they needed to buy some players. And doing so would make them better, but not necessarily in a way that was terribly strategic, I think.
Right.
You know, they don't need to do that again.
Yeah. So you know, I think
they can just actually have a plan and execute it.
Right. So Justin, I think the bottom line, I think your piece sussed this out pretty well, is the long and short of it is if the Phillies do decide to go this route, it's defensible. If there is a true defensive upgrade, like if the offense is a wash and you're upgrading the defense and you're only signing him to a 1 year deal, I can understand it. It would make some sense, but at the same time, is it worth it?
Yeah, and I think you're in danger of becoming the last year's team in like August and September again when you start replacing young core players with veterans just because they're there. And that's not, you know, not exactly what the Phillies would be doing, but that's kind of like the read on it that I came into this with. And it's just, looking more into how they compare as hitters and defenders really didn't do much to cleanse that notion out of my head. That it's just like, yeah, he's available. Yeah, you know, but he's also just like the next free agent on the list after Manny Machado is off the board. And yeah. Even just to get both these guys to like move their stuff doesn't seem worth it. So like,
that's what I'm. It's like, why don't even bother the whoever it is in the Phillies front office that has to deal with all this stuff. Don't even bother him. You know, it's not worth his time waking him up on a weekend or something like that to make him do that. Don't even bother with it. I agree with you, Justin. I don't see as it's really going to help the team a whole lot in 2019.
And in June, when Michael Franco strikes out like five times in a game with the bases loaded, you know, then we can look back on this and watch Mike Moustakas' All-Star campaign really take flight. But you know,
That's right.
Toss ourselves off a bridge.
I will burn episode number 250 before I allow that to happen. A couple other things we can go over here, and somebody asked this on Twitter, and I thought this was a really good question, Justin. It came in earlier on Sunday, and Tim Westcott, at Tim Westcott on Twitter, asked us, in order to be a true contender in the next few years, the Phillies need improvement from their young core. Which players not named Nola and Reese are most likely to perform at an all-star level within the coming years? And I like that he didn't ask us about just 2019, that he was asking us in the coming years. And I'll throw this out to you guys first, and then, you know, kind of see if I agree with your calls, because I have somebody in the back of my mind. But and I assume we're talking about position players here, because the starting rotation, I think, has some intriguing arms. I know I'm big on a Nick Pivetta breakthrough season this year. They pitched well last year, so we could talk about it. If you guys were thinking starting pitchers, that's fine. But I'm trying to, in my mind, focus on one of the young position players that we were kind of counting on and were disappointed in last year.
One of the young Phillies core is already an all-star, just so we don't forget about that. 2017 Seoul Phillies all-star Odubel Herrera. So one of them has a ceiling, yeah, that is all star, and I may sound like I'm speaking very pompously about Odubel Herrera, and that's because the out of focus shot of him working out in Florida has awoken my complete fanboyishness over Odubel Herrera and my belief that he is an all star player still, despite last year. I think there were obvious handicaps that were there, some of his own doing. I was very disappointed in Herrera's season, and I was disappointed to learn, as we did later on, that he lost a couple of clubhouse leaders and sort of fell off and didn't seem to see that as too big of an issue. Just he fell off sort of discipline, as sort of like self-discipline, not like there were discipline issues, but he seemed much less focused. And his season was just like burned hot at the start and then was one slow downward spiral to the end of the year when he looked absolutely terrible. But he was told to come back in better shape and just, you know, be the Odubel Herrera they know him to be after he sat down with Gabe Kapler. And, you know, he's down there already. He's working out. He looks good. And, you know, him and the other guys we're going to mention during this conversation are the kind of guys you need to see get to that next level or get back to that level that they were already on. Because, yeah, you know, Bryce Harper and Manny Machado or Manny Machado are going to sell tickets, but they aren't going to do this themselves. And those kind of guys who have those everyday roles, stepping up is what's going to make this team a playoff team as soon as the Phillies want to be one. So I think I'm back on board with on the Herrera train. I'm doing the El Torito horns as I'm doing this whole time. So I'm back on board.
Well, and Liz, real quick, I'm going to let you get yours just a second here, but I talked about Odubel Herrera on the last episode of the podcast as well, and you know, I think that we all forget that in the first 2 months of the season last year, the three of us were wondering and saying MVP. Odubel Herrera is the best player on this team. He was a legitimate National League MVP candidate. Through May 25th, he was hitting .339, .401, .531 with 7 homers and 11 doubles, and of course had that 44-game on-base got on base the first 44 games of his season. I mean, so that's what he can do. And we saw that, and he looked like he was about to have a career year and MVP season, and then the trapdoor opened. And so I still don't know exactly why that happened. I don't know that any of us will ever know exactly why that happened. Liz, what did go ahead, Justin.
I just want to say I do think he'll always be – I don't think he will – truly be a National League MVP. I said that. I remember saying it. I'm sure I wasn't the only one.
Well, we all did. We were all saying
yes. I do remember that, and that happened. I'm not ashamed of it, and we weren't wrong. But I do think now that he doesn't have the and you could say this about a lot of players on the Phillies, but Herrera especially doesn't have the consistency to put a full season of those kind of stats down. I mean, it was 2016, not 2017, that he went to the All-Star game, by the way. And that season, he was up and down in the way that you know him to be. You know, he hits 324 in May, it's 227 in July, and then ends the season hitting 306. Like, that's just the kind of hitter he is. So you can't figure him out. He's an unexplainable unicorn galloping in the distance, but when he's on, you want him on your team. And my goal is for him to be on more than he's off this year.
Herrera, Liz, how about you? Go ahead. Yeah.
One word about Herrera. He's like Shane Victorino, only with higher peaks and greater valleys.
Yeah.
Shane Victorino was he had that sort of, because it's like Herrera will be able to concentrate real hard for like 15 games. Then he like forgets how to swing a little bit, and his swing has got a lot of moving parts. It's like, you know, his knee is not moving the right way, and it takes him a few games to get back to it. You know, I think you're right with the consistency. I hope he sort of finds more of it this season. Of course, my pick is Jorge Alfaro.
That was going to be mine too. Good pick.
There aren't a whole lot of dudes, young dudes on the team as it stands right now that we have a terribly high opinion of beyond, you know, Hoskins, Nola. You know, I think Nick Williams has some potential to be very solid, you know, to be a solid sort of like average, above average hitter. But that's not really all-star material. Jorge Alfaro is special. I've always thought he was special. I got a chance to see him play a couple of years ago in the minors, and he was just fun to watch. He was still, you know, figuring out some stuff behind the plate. But watching him run from you know, home to first, dude is fast. He's so athletic.
Very athletic. Yep.
You know, Matt Gelb published a piece on The Athletic about Alfaro. I believe it was Gelb. And it was really good. I loved reading it, finding out more about how he, you know, got into catching. You know, Pudge Rodriguez thinks he's special. Like, that's, you know, Rodriguez is one of the great catchers of our time, I think. He's in the Hall of Fame for a reason. He was very good. And he thinks that Alfaro is special. I agree. Who am I to disagree with
too.
Pudge?
Yeah. No, he's got all the tools. If he can cut down his 40% strikeout rate to 30% even, he could be a dynamic hitter. I'm serious. If he's a 30% strikeout guy, he's a 20-homer guy. with a decent batting average, because you look at his numbers last year, he had a better OPS than a number of different catchers. I think he had the eighth best Fangraphs wins above replacement of all major league catchers last year. I mean, he even last year, in a season in which we don't really feel like he did all that great, he was still pretty good last year, especially for a guy who was really focusing on learning his defense, trying to learn how to frame pitches, and that's something he learned how to do really well. Blocking balls in the dirt is obviously, I think, the next evolution in his defensive game. Calling a game is, I think, heard a lot of question marks about that in the spring. I don't think that there were any issues with calling a game properly this past year, given how good the starting rotation did for most of the season. So I'm with you, Liz. I'm in. That's why I didn't really feel the need to go after and try and get JT Realmuto or to go after Yasmani Grandal or something like that. I mean, for the deal that Grandal signed, sure, why not? You go after Yasmani Grandal at that money, but I agree with you. I think Jorge Alfaro is the future at the position, and I think the Phillies feel the same way. I will just mention Scott Kingery real quick, and I don't know that he's going to be an all-star player. You know, there was so much hype about him coming out of spring last year. I'm looking at a Buster Olney tweet from March 8th of last year in which he said, heard this observation about Phillies infield prospect Scott Kingery, quote, he's Dustin Pedroia but with more talent.
Okay,
no,
I do you guys remember
guys,
that
they said Dom Brown was Daryl Strawberry? Like, these comparisons are worth nothing in the end. They're just,
I know, well, clearly, because Scott Kingery really struggled last year
in the spring
after watching him tear up spring training, which we've all seen Michael
Buster
Franco do year
Olney
in and year out.
I heard this comparison. My God, we took that seriously.
I know.
Hopefully,
but I do,
some of us laughed at it, but we were so happy to hear it in the spring because it was the spring. We can't let that happen to us this year.
Yeah. Well, we did laugh at it. I remember laughing at it. But yeah, it is. When he goes crazy in spring training this year, I think we're gonna hear a lot of that. But I do think the pendulum has swung the other direction a little bit too much now, that Kingery sucks, that he's a flame out, that he's washed out, that he's never going to be any good. There are fans who've given up on Scott Kingery, just completely given up on Scott Kingery. That's the point. And he was given some tough stuff to deal with last year, having to play a position shortstop full time that he really was ill equipped to play and not ready to play, had to mess up with his offensive game, making him a super utility guy, which was never a job that he had held in the minor league. Certainly probably messed up with his offensive game. And, you know, just being a rookie at the major league level when you're trying to do all this kind of stuff puts you behind the eight ball, and probably trying to justify having the major league contract put him behind the eight ball. It also prevented the team really from, I think, sending him down to the minors. I know they didn't have a lot of great shortstop options instead of Kingery, but they could have figured something else out if they felt like Kingery would have been better served in AAA, and I think he probably should have been sent down at certain points last year. And if you got to get somebody off the street to come in and handle shortstop defensively, fine, you do it. So I don't know. I like to think that Kingery's future is still bright. I just don't think he's going to accumulate the plate appearances this year to be an all-star necessarily this season. But I'm not ruling out the fact that once he's an everyday second baseman, that he can't be an all-star second baseman.
That contract extension was weird. And I think not a lot of people expected it that he got before the season. I would say that no one probably expected that. That seemed to catch a lot of people off guard. And it kind of changed view of Kingery throughout the season. But like, looking back, even now with the numbers he put up, yeah, the Phillies look a little strange having offered that to him and then see what he did that year. But at the same time, like, they're not idiots. They gave him this like unprecedented deal for a reason, so I'm perfectly fine believing that there's something else in there that Scott Kingery, he didn't hit that last year for all of the reasons that you said. And at this point, I'm starting to wonder, like, is there any one of these guys who's not a new acquisition, who's like, you know, one of these guys we watched last year, or has come up with the team, or came in one of the in the Giles trade or the Hamels trade, or anyone who just arrived as a young player from that era? Is there anyone that you're not expecting more from at this point? Like, I guess for, you know, Aaron Altair's kind of like trending low at this point, and maybe Nick Williams as well. But is there anybody that you're not expecting to kind of like get better in the next year or the next couple of years?
Well, Franco could be one of those guys,
Justin. That's what I mean.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, what if Franco puts it all together? Yeah, you're right. What if he hits 30 home runs this year? Hits 280. You know, I mean, that's always something I think that could be there for him.
Right. And that he's been on the team. He's been playing for third base for full time for 3 years. He's been in the league for 5 years. Herrera is like about the same. And we're still thinking that there's another gear that these guys are going to find, or in Herrera's case, another gear that he'll get back to. So there's just, I think there's not a lot of lost causes on this team. I guess that's my point. I don't look at a lot of these guys, and a lot of them frustrated us last year. But for some reason, there's still a lot of faces that you're not upset to see still on the team. But then again, there's also, you know, if they traded Michael Franco, I would be like, yeah, makes sense.
Last thing before we get out of here, guys, I'm just looking on Twitter, and Bryce Harper tweeted something 15 minutes ago. You ready for it?
Oh, God.
Here we go.
What emoji is it?
It's about the Patriots.
Confirmed. Just called Tony Romo to see where I'm going to play next year. Hashtag you're a wizard, Tony. Apparently, Tony
lying?
Romo. No. I am 100% serious. He tweeted it as we are recording this here at 11:20 on Sunday night. He tweeted it at approximately 11:15 on Sunday night.
Yeah,
so we need to call Tony Romo.
You're so funny. You're so funny, Bryce. My God.
Just pick a damn team.
At least he watches football. You think he would enjoy hanging out in an Eagles game with Mike Trout and Reese Oscar?
Mike, yeah.
I think.
My God, we didn't even think about that. Bryce Harper and Mike Trout hanging out at a football game.
That's true. We didn't.
Yeah, we did not think about that. That's accurate. Yeah.
Oh my God.
I think Bryce.
I'm going to write an article about it.
That's what you should.
I think Bryce mixed words. A little regular in with the decaf tonight.
There you go. All right, guys. Any final thoughts? Justin, any final thoughts before we wrap up here?
Philly's bullpen catcher, I think that's his job. Nick Rickles tweeted that he's looking for a new Netflix show. So I was thinking maybe we could help old Nick out because he's a good dude. Did you guys watch Bandersnatch?
No, I know. I've heard about it, but I also heard they're getting sued by the Choose Your Own Adventure publisher.
Because absolutely.
Unless it's called Choose Your Own Adventure, they can't patent that idea that existed long before they branded it.
They're very, very sensitive about protecting their brand. I think they've seen it kind of spread around and they're just like, no, that's ours. It was choosing is our idea. The branded concept from Choose Your Own Adventure. I was into that. There's a point where you're like, spoiler alert, kind of talking to the character in the movie. As someone who is watching him on Netflix.
That's odd.
And he's like in the 80s and he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And you're like, well, this is crazy. This is absolutely insane. So I'd recommend that. That was good.
All right.
I am not a Black Mirror person.
Huge Black Mirror person.
I've seen a couple of them. There's a couple I really liked. I liked the Star Trek one. I thought that was entertaining. I'm trying to remember. There was one with Bryce Dallas Howard that I thought was entertaining. But some of the other ones, I'm just like, nope, too much for me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was a good one. But I think Netflix, I watch just old stuff on Netflix. I don't get into a lot of the new content that they're spending $3 billion a year on and like basically losing $3 billion a year making all this new stuff. They just increased prices again in order to pay for it. So I'm waiting for Netflix to price itself out of everybody's lives. But in the meantime, did you guys see Bird Box yet?
I read the book. I kind of didn't, it wasn't a bad book, but it kind of turned me off from wanting to see the movie just because, I don't know. I just never got on board with the concept.
Yeah. I haven't seen it either. It's one of the more popular Netflix shows or Netflix movies that have been made recently. Yeah, I watch mostly old stuff.
Liz, you're hipping with it. Have you Bird Box challenged this?
No.
Pretty much so.
You're doing it right now, aren't you?
No, I'm not. I'm not much of a thriller person, I guess. I'm lame. I kind of want to watch it, but it seems scary.
My wife likes to watch a show called Lark Rise to Candleford. Are any of you guys familiar with Lark Rise?
Okay, wait,
to Candleford?
Wait, hang on.
You're making it up.
But I am going to guess that this is a British period drama.
It is a British. It is a. It is a British show.
Manner of some kind.
It follows the tale of a young woman from the rural town of, I think, Candleford or whatever it is,
sure,
to Lark Rise, which is a more metropolitan setting, and she works in a post office.
And that's well, and that's it. That's the show.
That's the show. Well, that's it. That's the show.
I have a better recommendation. If you're looking for a period sort of thing, one of my favorite Netflix shows, it's actually an Australian show. It's called Miss Fisher's Murder Mysteries. It is fun and stylish. Lots of, you know, flapper clothes. It's a woman who's like in her mid-40s, who's rich. She has lots of sex with attractive men. She solves mysteries. She flaunts the norms of the 1920s. It's the best. Everyone should watch it.
I love a norm flaunter. I'll be perfectly honest with you. I love a good norm flaunter.
Yes, it is. It's a super fun show. Everyone, Miss Fisher's Murder Mysteries is really great. I think for a show Nick Rickles might like, Nailed It is really fun. That is on Netflix. If he's looking for millennial schadenfreude, allow me to recommend both Fire Festival documentaries.
Oh, I just watched the Netflix one. Yeah, that was it's entertaining just to relive that insane thing.
Oh, and then please go watch the Hulu one because it takes a whole different angle. It's really, they're both excellent. And I just rewatched John Mulaney's most recent stand-up special.
I love John Mulaney.
Yes, again, everyone, watch John Mulaney.
Yeah, he's awesome. All right, Liz, any final thoughts from you, or were those your final thoughts, do you think?
Those are my final thoughts. If you're looking for more Netflix recommendations or television in general, come find me on Twitter. I can help you.
And Liz can be found on Twitter at Liz Rocher. Justin can also help. He can be found on Twitter at Justin_Clue, and I'm on Twitter at John Stolness. But don't come to me looking for any current shows to watch. I can give you the skinny on all the good kids shows to watch because that's all that's ever on our television. But if you're looking for something that's suitable for anyone over the age of 9, you're probably going to want to hit up Liz and Justin instead of me. But again, folks,
kids, don't worry. He actually does have kids.
I do. Yeah. No. Yeah. I'm not watching Super Y for my own enjoyment. I do enjoy it. All right. Well, listen, folks, that'll do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. My thanks to Justin and Liz for coming on the podcast once again. And go on over to Apple Podcasts if you haven't done so, gang, and make sure that you're subscribing to The Good Fight, rating and reviewing the podcasts. All of us here at Hittin' Season, Justin and Liz's show, continued success, and, of course, the award-winning Dirty Inning with Justin and Dr. Trevor Strunk. Make sure that you're giving us those 5-star ratings. They help us move up those Apple Podcast rankings. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you all next time right here on Hittin' Season.
Hi, this is Jim.
And this is Max.
Check out our podcast, The Step Over, Liberty Ballers Podcast Network, for all of your Sixers needs.
Player analysis, game breakdowns, who would look coolest in a headband, and more.
Subscribe to Liberty Ballers Podcast feed on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and check out The Step Over, a podcast about Sixers basketball.
Mostly.